welcome to Data Protection Made Easy, hosted by Data Protection People. My name is Charlotte Hogg, and I will be your host for today's session, and I am joined by Becky Tucker, founder of House of Risk. And today is episode 102, and we have an extra special session focusing on the Social Housing Reform Bill. Becky, how did you think today's session went?
Oh, I think it was a really useful place to be able to kind of unpick one of the biggest challenges that are currently being faced in the sector for social housing landlords, for sure. You know, where we talked about, you know, the links with reputation of the sector and the implications of the bill, you know, going forward on things like the Building Safety Act. You know, really, really useful stuff, and generated such a lot of engagement from the attendees as well.
Exactly. And there's a really good conversational piece around, you know, the access, tenant access to information, and the sort of FOI styly, you know, access for, well, for tenants, I suppose that's the right word. But yeah, really good session. And without further ado, we'll let you listen through. So, Becky, would you like to just introduce yourself for those that may not know you?
Oh, sure, absolutely. Hopefully lots of people do, but I'm Becky Tucker, and I'm founder of a new risk management consultancy called House of Risk. I'm not your usual consultant, you might say, and probably all consultants say that, but I'm not, having had that kind of recent strong background in housing sector risk management. I've worked at 5 housing associations over the years, around 13 of those in housing itself. The first housing association I worked for had 3,500 properties, right through to my most recent one, which was the Catalyst Peabody merger, which now stands at over 100,000 properties. Lots of background and experience in housing, Charlotte.
Fabulous. And for those that don't know, Becky and I did used to work together at my previous organisation, which is how we came to meet. So should we have a quick look at what's going on in the news this week, and then we can get underway with our session?
Sounds good.
Okie dokie. So the first thing that I found this week was, well, the ICO seems to have published a update on its guidance on international transfers, and that's also including a update on how to do transfer risk assessments, which is incredibly helpful in my opinion. I don't know what you think about that.
Yes, absolutely. And it's, you know, one of those things for me that certainly in my background from a data protection perspective was around thinking that's not for you. Mm-hmm. You know, we're a housing association based in the UK. But actually, you know, lots and lots of our suppliers and providers are part of that international kind of approach. And so we do need to know about this stuff for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Have you spotted anything else in the news this week, Becky?
Well, I was absolutely amazed, actually, in the news this week, looking at the Google fine, you know, £330 million or $391 million to settle that allegations around how it collects and uses their customer data. Unbelievable, that kind of tracking and location data. But what a fine. How incredible is that?
I know. I'm surprised that they've actually agreed to pay it. But I suppose it has been going on for so long now that they probably realised that there was no backing down, no getting out of this one.
No, absolutely not. No. I think it was interesting around the settlement being the largest in US history. That's kind of setting the bar now, isn't it? What's next?
Yeah, exactly. I did also notice that Facebook's privacy deal has finally been approved, and that was for £76 million.
Which started forever ago, didn't it?
I know. 2011, wasn't it?
Yeah, madness.
Absolutely. And then this isn't news related, but it is something that I found when I was perusing the internet. Have you seen the thing from the public interest lawyers about how to make compensation claims for data breaches in the housing sector?
For me, this reeks of the personal injury accident mm-hmm. lawyers, that kind of, you know, no win, no fee thing. But this is now data, isn't it? And it's quite incredible. Like you say, I don't think it's terribly new, but it's something that I hadn't come across previously. No,
mm-hmm. No, I know. Like obviously with your experience, you've seen it with, you know, insurance and stuff like that. But I've not seen it for sort of data protection sphere of things. And like looking through it, it even sets out what you can claim compensation range wise, which I think is
how much?
Absolutely bonkers. Yeah. Exactly. Absolutely bonkers. If anyone wants to have a look at that, I'm happy to pop a link into the chat.
Just I think it's worth taking a peek.
All right, let me just pop it in. I think over to you, Becky.
Oh, okay.
To introduce our juicy topic.
Lovely. So, okay. So in today's session, we will be unpicking one of the biggest challenges currently facing the sector and landlords in general, I think, Shah. Mm-hmm. I think to start with, I'm just going to put some context around this because I think that would be helpful in terms of the actual bill and where it's coming from and how it's going to impact on us. And let's start with that kind of reputation piece, really. I was recently at the National Housing Federation Audit and Risk Conference, and Jonathan Waters from the regulator was there. And his speech, his keynote speech was kind of twofold for me. One of them was around data, nothing else but, mm-hmm. and absolutely around that quality of data and making sure that you've got all of your ducks in a line as organisations. And then the second was firmly the reputation piece. So recently we did a bit of a housing conversation around the sector risk profile that came out in October, where it absolutely, much like Jonathan's keynote, was talking about reputation in the sector. Mm-hmm. And so I appreciate that, you know, over the past kind of 4 to 5 years, really, the housing sector has taken a bit of a battering, you know, right back to the Grenfell disaster, where we all know about that in this call, for sure. Mm-hmm. The high-rise fire in North London. Actually, one of the deadliest fires structurally in the UK since Piper Alpha. You're too young to remember that, Shah, but 1988.
I don't know what that is.
Oil platform disaster. There will be people on this call that remember that. I'm hoping it's not just me. And then the other side of that, the worst UK residential fire since World War II. Really quite incredible, really. So inevitably, you know, change is required. We're seeing stuff that needs that change. And a building safety reform followed that. So this year we're seeing the new Building Safety Act and specific regulator for building safety stood up. But actually why I'm talking about all of this stuff is around that kind of data and the links between making sure that organisations have got that quality of data, you understand mm-hmm. your property stock, not only what you've got, but what condition and state it's in. And then I guess alongside that, we've seen, you know, loads of high profile kind of cases in the media, haven't we, around mm-hmm. damp and mould and living conditions of tenants. You know, firstly, with that ITV programme that we saw, and then closely followed with that, you know, the really sad death of the 2-year-old Awar Bishkak. You know, from Rochdale, really, really horrendous. And back in February, the Peabody, where I was previously, you know, found a resident in there in a bedsit, having died 2 years previously. So, you know, the links to data are really quite phenomenal.
Exactly. You think about that sort of thing. And 2 years is a very, very long period of time. And have the data been relevant, up to date and accurate?
Yeah. And not only the data being up to date, but also the joining of the dots of that data. And I think that's really important, isn't mm-hmm. it? That you can have all of the up to date data that you need and want. But actually, if you're not having departments talk to each other about that data and systems and technology that can kind of join up that conversation, mm-hmm. then you're lost, really. Exactly. You know, you get situations like that happen, don't you?
Exactly. And it's very unfortunate and it is very sad. But, you know, they seem to be reoccurring things that keep coming up in the news, you know, weekly at the moment.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's definitely a hot topic.
Yeah, definitely. Reputationally as a sector, mm-hmm. we've got some work to do for sure. Absolutely. And I guess it's all of this backdrop, really, that the social housing reform has happened in the first place, this bill, and its intention to drive behaviour in, you know, and change in the sector, which, exactly. you know, we can't argue with, can we? You know, that feels like the right thing.
It really does.
The government have badged this as a kind of, what do they call it, major reset mm-hmm. requirement. And yeah, I'm okay with that. I think that feels like the right and good and proper thing to do. However, having said that, from from the perspective of the sector more generally, that has implications.
Oh, absolutely. And
those implications of change and what we've got to be, doing in our organisations to comply is really mm-hmm. quite phenomenal.
Exactly. No, I'm in agreement, and I am, you know me, I am one for change. May that be we go dragging, kicking and screaming, or we all walk along, we just deal with it and get on with it. But shall we dig in a little bit deeper?
Yeah, I think so. I think I'd like to kind of just start with those kind of headline points, if I may. So,
of course.
So the bill itself is, going to enable the regulator to intervene with landlords, and particularly those that are poorly performing. And we've seen a bit of that already this mm-hmm. this past few weeks, haven't we? Which I think is good and right and proper. The other side of that is that the regulator being able to come in and inspect landlords and arrange emergency repairs to ensure tenants are being, provided with good quality accommodation. Mm-hmm. Absolutely right. Interesting for us today, particularly, is around that transparency piece, the introduction of the tenant satisfaction measures, but also the access to business data that we mm-hmm. haven't seen before. Mm-hmm. And so I know this has already been introduced in Scotland last year, and that is around, almost like the freedom of information that councils have to comply with mm-hmm. and governments. But actually, this time for housing associations, not quite badged as FOI, which is interesting. Shah, I don't know what your thoughts are.
No, it's. I think when the bill first kind of came out as the white paper and people read it and they just kind of went, I don't really know what to do with this. So I think it's going to be a massive learning curve for the sector in general. I know some do comply and some do try to be as transparent already. But I think for those that haven't really had, I suppose capacity is the right word, I think it's going to be a really big learning curve. And I think it might cause quite a few challenges, which, of course it will. But it'll be interesting to see what approaches different organisations choose to take.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And thank you, Mandy. I think that's a really good point. So Mandy's just popped in the chat there, Shah, that actually if we were to call it FOI, then suddenly it recategorises housing associations, and then impacts on things like the lending confidence of the sector, because that enters into the stats around the government economy. So mm-hmm. it's really interesting. So they've been trying for years and years to get us recategorized, if you like, as a public body, but real pushback from the government.
Yeah,
they don't want to,
no,
they don't sense. Want that on their loan book at all. Really good connection, Mandy, and I agree completely. But organisations are going to need to think about this kind of soft touch, if you want to call it that, around FOI, mm-hmm. and really think about how to put that in action. It might be new technologies that allow a self-serve, for example. I know some of the local authorities have gone down that route, haven't they, where mm-hmm. you can now log into their website and find quite a lot of information. I know I did some work when I was at Sovereign with some housing associations. I don't know if anybody's on the call and remembers, but we did some work around this to try and kind of preempt what those indicators might be. And I'm guessing they're going to be things like, repairs and quality of, Chris is on the call, and you remember, Chris. So we did quite a bit of work around this in preparation, actually, for freedom of information coming in, because we thought it was going to at one point.
I remember having conversations with you 3 years ago about it coming in, and look where we are now. It's still not quite there, but it is just rebranded. So,
yeah, exactly. And I think if associations think about it in a rebranded rather than a it's different, then we'll won't go far wrong. I think that software providers are going to need to think about how we extract some of this data and make it easy to post up on websites technologically, certainly.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Do you think it's going to have much implication from a data protection perspective, being that this is business data?
I mean, it depends what stance the organisation chooses to look at it at. Let's face it, it's probably going to get lumped in with that data protection functionality within each organisation. They're going to be the ones that become responsible for it. And, you know, quite often you see fairly small teams, specifically within the housing sector. And I think having that sort of additional need and requirement added onto that team, I think it might start to show where the issues might lie. And again, you know, people say, oh, we've got X, Y, and Z on file, but when you go and ask for it, does it actually exist? Has that data been retained for as long as it should have been retained for? Was it ever documented at all? You never know.
That's a really interesting point, Char. I hadn't drawn the dots there, and I should have done. And that, for me, resonates with the work that we did around the retention. We worked with the National Housing Federation on the data retention schedules that we all kind of access as housing associations. I just wonder now whether or not we need a bit of a revisit of that.
Quite possibly.
To make a note. Yeah,
add something to your never-ending to-do list, eh, Becky?
Yeah, indeed. But it's a really good point, and I hadn't thought about that as a connection until you said that.
No, I think it's going to cause a lot of conversation within the sector, and I think that's a good thing. At the end of the day, you know, quite often you kind of get bared within your own organisation, and you forget that you can probably reach out to the rest of your network. So I think it's good that it might spark a bit more conversation, and it will get the ball rolling again.
Yeah, absolutely. Certainly, Mira, I can provide a link. That's not a problem at all. And Colin, I completely agree. That's what I was referring to. So that record management and retention are absolutely key. And creating that schedule, much like they do in FOI, is certainly the case. And what does Chris say here? So then might be a crossover. Absolutely. And there will be. Mm-hmm. And we need to be super careful about making sure that we don't have an issue with that crossover with personal data. But actually, when you're asking for the repairs history of your block, for example, and these are the types of questions I can see happening, it's there that mistakes can easily be made, where we've got
exactly.
And Mandy, you're right as well. Emails. How are we going to deal with that? It's going to be an additional kind of connection between that personal data again, isn't it?
Exactly.
Thanks, Jo. She's popped it up. Look.
Oh, I was just trying to find it. So thanks, Jo. It's made my life easier.
Brilliant. It's nice to have somebody working away in the background for us. Oh,
isn't it?
What does Rob say? Oh, yes. These were always a bit of a bugbear.
Let's not go into Teams. The stress I have felt having to try and get things from Teams, it's been near impossible.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And Colin, don't mention the E word. Yeah. But actually, I think it's exactly, Rob. It's that T word, the Teams one. The challenges that Shara and I certainly had over the years with this one was interesting. But the data's there. It's people's personal data, and it's there, isn't it?
Exactly. And
I think that probably leads us into the bit around that kind of tenant engagement and complaints handling as well,
yeah.
Where, you know, that kind of increases the importance in the way that landlords interact with tenants, and that's going to have to change.
Exactly.
And I don't, you know what, when you see some of the stuff around, particularly around the Rochdale piece and around the Peabody piece where, you know, the resident was found in their property, I think that that tenant engagement and complaints piece is really, really important. And when we've got, you know, joining of the dots again, my favourite phrase at the moment, isn't it? Around, you know, we've got, you know, reports of horrible smell in the communal areas in a block. Why we're not kind of investigating that in a more robust way when we've also had lack of communication from a resident that we've been trying to reach and
exactly.
All of those things. Suddenly, you know, I know in hindsight it's easy to say, isn't it? But on the other hand, when you step back and have
exactly.
a look at it.
You'd kind of expect certain parameters to be in place that would, you know, kick in. Oh, we've received 4 phone calls from this particular block of flats saying that there's a weird smell possibly coming from X flat. They've not been in contact with us for 7 months.
Mm.
Surely, even if it's just a welfare check or just a general phone call, that sort of thing, just to, you know, check in, everything okay. But it's a shame that that sort of thing does go amiss, and it does go amiss quite easily. I mean, I think from experience, those that don't know my full background, when I joined my previous organisation, I did start in their contact centre, and this was quite a regular occurrence of things that you would see is people would say, oh, I've not seen my neighbour for 3 weeks. Usually we see them every day. No, it seems a bit weird. So, but sometimes it just gets lost in translation, unfortunately. Mm. And I suppose it goes with the how do we need to look at how we approach complaints and dealing with complaints and understanding our customers and their needs and, you know, what could happen spurring from that as well.
Yeah, totally. And I see Leslie's posting in the chat there around the data retention piece. And making sure that we're understanding the data that we've got, but that we're also applying retention.
Exactly.
And it's so difficult when you've got data on so many different systems in housing associations. We haven't got the ability to, you know, have this utopia that I used to call it, where you've got a single repository of all of the data for all of your residents in one place. You don't.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Exactly. And you're right that you know, the links to the Building Safety Act that I mentioned earlier are key here. That golden thread of information, and one of the things that the data protection people and House of Risk and 3C and myself are putting together is a governance, risk and compliance conference. And you know, really because of these things about that golden thread, the joining of the dots, as I say, around all of the kind of the data, the risks in the associations and the systems in which we store all of that.
Exactly. And I think looking back at an organisation that we both used to work at, how many legacy, both before merger, after merger, how many legacy systems did we have that, you know, still within retention, still had to apply it, but it just made, especially work on SARS, it made it near impossible, especially if it was for a tenancy that, say, predated the 90s, if not earlier than that. It just became a headache, a massive headache.
As Leslie says, look, legacy systems, we absolutely, yeah,
I agree.
And you know, Sovereign by no means are independent in that. This is a you know, a problem across the board, really.
I'm in agreement with you, David. It is definitely very challenging, very, very challenging.
Yes, Chris, back to the information asset register again. And actually, you know, it was something at the forefront of our mind when we were getting ready for GDPR. So let's not kind of forget that as well. Now, the information asset register is a really critical piece of information for the organisation to make sure that we understand where everything is and how to access it and what systems we've got and et cetera. Mm-hmm. Well, Laura, yes. That's so easy, isn't it? And you know, not being able to apply the data retention in a strategic way means that absolutely we are collecting, and not only collecting but holding it for too long.
Exactly. And I think we've all seen,
we've all seen and experienced, you know, different situations where you've gone, I'm pretty sure we shouldn't still be storing this, but maybe we should just keep it for a little bit longer. And it's that never ending cycle of setting that retention and then just carrying on with it and making sure that it's been implemented correctly and that we're following process and procedure.
Yeah.
Something doesn't quite work, but it's fine. It's a work in progress.
Yeah, absolutely. And Chris, you're right. We need to extend the IAR because it is such a useful document. You know, there's no two ways about it, really. Mm-hmm. What's Gary saying? Hi, Gary. Nice to see you. So a number of high profile safeguarding incidents over the years stated that the interagency communication was lacking. Well, yeah, I mean, we've seen. The story around the 2-year-old from Rochdale was resonating so much with me around the baby P. If any of you remember Peter, the little baby of many years ago that was abused from a safeguarding perspective in their home.
And the Victoria Kalimbe case as well.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, we're seeing it again. Why are we seeing it again? You know, we've seen huge cases of this happen over the years, shocking cases. And yet again, we're seeing it. And you just think, you know, how does that happen? Yeah, absolutely.
No, and that kind of links into, do all organisations staff understand what you can and can't do when it comes to safeguarding? Because I always think there's this weird misconception that when it comes to safeguarding in GDPR, we can't share it. Absolutely can, especially if it's that life or death situation. I think it's just ensuring that staff understand what their obligations are.
Yeah, totally, because it gets in the way, doesn't it? You know, and we mustn't let it get in the way.
Exactly. I feel like we steered away from the complaints a little bit.
We did a little bit.
Our way back.
But actually, you know, from that complaints bit and you know, joining up the intel, I like to call it intel, when we've got all of the intel in the business, and then suddenly a complaint comes in that kind of goes, oh, actually, you know, there's quite a lot of rent arrears in this property, and you know, we haven't been able to access for gas safety inspections, and you know, so we've got a lot of intel that comes into the business that, you know, enables us to kind of think about you know, that whole story, that backstory, if you like, behind that property.
Exactly. Corey, I'm not giving you a month, I'm sorry.
What does Corey say? Hi, Corey, nice to see you here too. I try not to think about complaints at the moment, at least. Okay. At least give me 1 full month. No, well, yes, okay.
For context, we used to work with Corey as well, and he's recently moved over into a similar role that I had. So,
hello. Yes, he's got the joy. Yes, yeah, nice to see you, Corey. So where are we going next then?
We haven't spoken about our wonderful triangle that we always like to refer to.
Oh my gosh. I know. That's like my favourite part of complaints, isn't it? And I always kind of go, is it a triangle or is it a square? I can never quite work out. Yeah, but actually what we're referring to here is the join up. And that is, you know, quite often you'll see a complaint come in. And the complaint comes in as part of a data subject access request because you've got a resident that's trying to gather information about their complaint, because actually what they want to do is put in a disrepair claim to your legal team, or they want to put in a insurance claim because they, you know, something's happened, you know, nearby their property or whatever, and they want to make sure that they know that they've got everything that you've got as an organisation. So I kind of always do that. You know, you've got complaints at the top of the tree here, and you've got insurance over here, and a data subject access request here, and then somewhere in that you've got, you know, the legal kind of disrepair piece. But yeah, you're quite right. Yeah,
over in the corner you've got data breaches as well, so it all ties up.
Yeah, no, it does. Yeah, we've seen some wonderful examples of that over the years, haven't we?
Oh yes, the weird, the wonderful, and the wild. So
yeah, definitely the wild.
I think everyone can agree that they've seen some very interesting very interesting breaches, DSARS complaints over the years.
Yeah, sure. I was just reading, Louisa, what are you saying? So just a quick one, if possible, in terms of processing equality data, such as race and sexual orientation, any thoughts on relying on legitimate interest? Ooh, and public interest, condition 8. What do we think about this, Char?
I mean, I'm always a bit sceptical about collecting it when, you know, it may not necessarily be the case. I suppose in some cases you do need to know.
It's purpose,
exactly,
isn't it?
Exactly.
And for me, I've had many a conversation internally where I can remember actually at the point of GDPR days when we were going, we're going to stop collecting this data because we don't need it for anything. And then we'd have communities team going, oh, but well, I do use it. I use it for this, this and this. And actually, you know, what about public reporting back to government and, you know, all of these things? And actually, we do have legitimate purposes for using this data. Mm. Absolutely, we do. Just don't overreach,
exactly,
would be my view on that.
Hi, Phil. I can see your hand up.
Yes.
Oh.
I was listening to that. I might have over misread this or misheard this, but obviously there is provision in the Data Protection Act, Schedule 1, Section 8, for collecting EDI data for the purposes of monitoring equality of opportunity. So it's not a legitimate interest if it's special category data. We have to rely on Article 9.2G, which is substantial public interests, and then we have to look at the Data Protection Act to find out which substantial public interests apply. And in that case, you know, if anyone wants to look, it's DPA 18, Schedule 1, Section 8. And that can be used to justify the collection and legitimise the collection of EDI data. There are some limitations, some constraints that are set out there. But if anyone wants to know what those are, just drop us a note back and we'll clarify it.
You know what strikes me about that, Phil, is you're not looking at that, are you? Actually know that.
I was in the office saying, come on, somebody, it's chipping, it's obvious.
It's clearly it is. Yeah.
So apologies.
Yeah. Anyway, there we are. Look, Chris has said yes, please, Phil.
And Louisa said yes, please, as well.
Right, we'll send something out, so not a problem.
Perfect.
Great stuff. Yeah.
And hand down onto mute again.
Feel free to join in if you want to. It's fine.
Nice to see you.
That's the oracle in case anybody wants to ask a question.
that is very true, Kathy.
I know.
we don't mind that at all. Mm-hmm. I think let's just move ourselves on a bit then. And I was thinking about the unlimited fines section, Shah, in the new bill. And that is that can be found, so housing associations can be found persistently underperforming. So if they're continuously underperforming, then there will be the potential for unlimited fines, and that's a really cold hard fact, isn't it? Unlimited fines. We're not saying, you know, like GDPR where we've got a specific target, but actually depends what it is. And really interesting that kind of I can remember the Michael Gove saying the name and shame the worst offenders to ensure residents continue to live in good quality homes, and stating it's disgraceful that anyone lives in a home that's cold, damp and unsafe. Absolutely right. Agreed. And let's not start talking about lifestyle here. And the links between our repairs team telling our residents that actually they should open a window. And whilst there is absolutely the right thing to do, it's not the only thing to do, and that actually associations need to take responsibility for the quality and condition.
Exactly. And I think, you know, looking back at some of the cases that we may have dealt with over the years, some of it may have been down to lifestyle, but quite honestly, it's where, you know, you see a consistent pattern of jobs being raised. The job hasn't been raised correctly because the data's not been captured properly by, you know, so the contact advisor. The job's then gone out, it's been sent to the wrong trade, or, you know, it's not been set for the right amount of time. And all these different factors then mean that this poor individual then has to have 6, 7, 8 appointments for something that probably should have been dealt with in maybe 2 different appointments, or because that original capturing of the data and what the issue is just wasn't done in a sufficient manner. And I think quite a lot of the SARs that I have dealt with or complaints came from that kind of spur where it was just the never ending cycle of things just not going through correctly, probably because the data's not been captured properly in the first instance.
Totally. And it kind of links quite nicely with that kind of new kind of Ofsted style inspection regime. And, you know, really kind of thinking about the tenant complaints, as you say, repairs not being carried out in a timely manner, versus the kind of regulator then entering properties and they can now come in with 48 hours notice and subsequently complete repairs and check up to make sure that those repairs are being completed.
And bill the landlord at the end.
Really interesting. Those new powers of emergency repairs, I think, are a turning point from that, and hopefully we'll work in the right way to drive the right behaviour at least.
Exactly. And I think it will help housing associations sort of target the areas and locations and localities that they know probably need significantly more TLC, I suppose, because I think quite often the focus can always be on, oh, look at this new build, we've got more new builds coming, but it's the older stock, which, you know, can often be quite problematic due to sort of the age of the property, but I think they quite often get forgotten about, and that's where you then also then see the increase again, back to complaints, back to subject access requests.
And I was just thinking as you were talking then, actually, about how the regulator is going to manage all this, that actually if they're having to know. You know, if they're having to come in and these kind of, you know, last minute drop of the hat kind of Ofsted style inspections when there are problems and responsively, you know, how are they going to manage that in terms of a resource?
Exactly. And how I'd be interested to know how they would also conduct. Obviously, you know, you can go into tenants' properties, but what about when it comes to, you know, the business data? How are we expected to provide everything at such short notice? If they are saying, you know, 48 hours, 24 hours to go under review, how are organisations supposed to be in that position where they can say, right, this is everything you've requested, here you go? Because quite often that's not plausible. It's not the case. Again, back to legacy systems, I suppose.
Yeah, definitely. I think that one of the things I was thinking about recently was the need for organisations really to get, I like to describe it as get strategic about the operational, and really kind of, you know, looking at all of that, the environment that we're working in, the operational data that the organisation is telling them, and what they're then going to do with that from a strategic perspective, for me feels like a really good time to be doing this right now.
Yes, no, I'm in agreement with that one.
And I guess that kind of, you know, that wide angle lens bit around strategic decisions, rebalancing the resources. At the moment, we've got, you know, investment in our existing homes and the services in which we provide as organisations. At the same time, we've got prioritising that kind of health and safety piece and the net zero targets along, and on, you know, a real dilemma for me on top of that then is how do we then also address the additional homes that are required? So, you know, that all impacts on the sector from every angle at the moment.
No, I agree. Right. Where else did we want to go with this one? There was this bit about the electrical safety standards as well. Obviously, going back to that, it sort of prompted in my head. Do you remember the white goods project that we had ongoing a couple of years ago? So in our previous life, we discovered that, was it Key Worker Properties, or was it?
It was, yeah.
So within our Key Worker Properties, we hadn't quite realised that not everything that should have been PAT tested was being PAT tested, and how we were going to sort of collate this data, make sure that the data is accurate, up to date, how we were going to ensure that we were then able to put that into that sort of cyclical cycle and going through with it that way. And I remember starting that project and thinking, oh my goodness, how have we gotten into this position? I don't know where to go from here. After a while, it's fine. We got it underway and everything went through up until COVID, which obviously caused a bit of a spanner. But generally, The start of that project, that kind of goes to show how, you know, we need to ensure that our data is accurate, it's kept up to date. We know exactly what we have in each of our properties, especially if it is one of those properties where we are providing furniture and furnishings for those individuals, especially when it comes to white goods.
Yeah, no, definitely. And actually, the approach I know we finished up with at Sovereign was about making sure that we were clearly gifting those white goods appliances to individuals to avoid this, because otherwise the data quality around it is really quite really quite alarming. You need to know, and you know, every 12 months making sure that when there's a, you know, an update to a white goods maintenance schedule or whatever it might be, that you're then telling your residents and you're keeping that data, knowing that they've got that particular model of appliance, for example.
Exactly.
Became horrendous, exactly. Didn't it?
And that was more thinking about the, you know, toasters, kettles, that sort of stuff, because the big white goods, you know, washing machine, fridge, you kind of expect that to be within the cycle anyway, as part of, particularly with key worker properties. But I think when you think, oh, this room has, or this flat, should I say, has, you know, 4 desk lamps, how do you monitor that? What if one breaks and gets thrown away? How is that kept up to date? And how is it plausible at the end of the day?
Mm-hmm. And actually, there's something about the the change in social housing standards as well, where we've got the private sector quite often providing white goods, and then, you know, how do we then compete with that as housing associations in as a sector? It's really true. So what's going on here then?
Quite a lot by the looks of it.
So you may have mentioned this in the late to the call, the new access to tenant information. Yes, we did. I would recommend going back to the beginning, Sandra, and having a re-listen to the first end, because we absolutely covered quite a lot of that. And one of the key challenges is absolutely, Andrew. I think that, making sure that we've got a differentiation, and I think Shah touched upon this with quite a critical point, and that is all of this going to then fall to the data protection team, those that look after DSARs? Is this then just going to be an add-on? And if so, you know, how are we going to treat that slightly differently? To, because historically, Shah, you'll remember, we would push this back to the business, wouldn't we? If we had an inquiry about something that was actually more of an FOI style requirement, we would say, actually, we'll signpost you out to finance, and they can tell you how much a spend was on that particular property, from a communal area spend, repairs type question, that type of thing. Whereas actually now I can see it, you know, becoming a bit of a problem.
Exactly. Oh,
Gary, that's very kind of you. I see you've dug out the Building Safety Act link. And quite rightly, Gary in the chat there was making the connection between that golden thread of information, and that the Building Safety Act is asking for this as well. And one of the things I wanted to kind of highlight there, which is probably an issue for many people in the call, and that is around the managing agents piece, and about responsibilities and data around that, you know, who's insuring what, and what information is actually shared as part of that.
Exactly.
And because actually, you know, not having that right data on your systems is absolutely critical when it comes to building safety nowadays. And I know that lots of organisations struggle with this.
No, I agree. You see it quite often that, you know, someone says, oh, but we're the controller. Are you really the controller? Have you sort of defined what the relationship is, who's going to have what. It's the same with joint ventures as well. It can cause quite a lot of complication, especially when it does come to, you know, building records and building management and all of that sort of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely right. Absolutely right. And Andrew, I think that would be a really interesting poll, actually. I'm going to push it back to Miles behind the scenes and see if he can work some magic for us in the technological side of things. But actually, a poll around under the new bill, who's going to be handling what? And actually, is the question, has anybody thought about this yet? Because you know, there's that side of it as well, isn't there? There's some, you know, it's all very well saying who's going to be doing this going forward, but have our organisations ready for this? Are we?
I think that particular aspect probably will have, other than to, you know, data protection experts, it probably has fallen to the back of people's minds, because there are other things in there that, you know, may take precedent just with what's going on in the news currently. I think that's a good idea, getting a poll out. If Miles, we can get something sorted, that would be fantastic.
No pressure or anything, because one of the other things I was thinking about and linked to this actually was the tenant satisfaction measures. And actually, Shah and I were talking about this, and that is around, you know, who's on the journey, you know, what's your preparations around this? And, you know, in terms of the following kind of principles around that, you know, who's ready for this right now, it applies to the tenant satisfaction measures as well. And oh, I love that Miles has suggested a nice little segue in for you to mention.
Oh, Charles. He has, hasn't he? So we are, as of today, we are launching a new forum. This is going to be based on LinkedIn. So it is for all data protection professionals within the housing sector. And it is, for the time being, we're hoping to sort of change how it may work later on down the line. But for the time being, we want it to be a space where all data protection practitioners and professionals can ask those weird, those wonderful and the downright crazy questions that we see, where you just think, I've got no one to ask within my organization, I don't know what to do, but maybe someone else will have a steer on, you know, a similar scenario. So as of today, we are launching the Data Protection Housing Forum, and Miles has beat me to it, so thank you very much, Miles. But if you would like to join, please do, and we will get that poll up on there as well.
Yeah, brilliant. Thanks, Shah. And I know that that kind of sits quite nicely alongside the National Housing Risk Managers Group that I run, in the same way, actually. So we're meeting for our Merry Riskmas on the 14th of December. So if anybody's interested in that one as well, I think these two groups run really nicely alongside each other in our kind of partnership working. So thank you, Miles, for posting that.
I think there's a couple of comments that we may have missed, Becky.
Oh, okay, let's go back. Oh yeah, what have we got? So what's Chris saying to us? Oh, hang on a minute there. What's Colin linking to? I haven't spotted that one either.
Let's have a look.
I don't know what that is, Colin.
It is the Bullet Point Building Safety Act, what you need to know.
Oh, ideal. So a bit of a more accessible summary. That sounds like a good plan. Right, Chris, what are you saying? So the access to information scheme. Oh, yes, I remember this, Chris. It needs to be signed off by appropriate. So I'm not sure that that will apply if we're not compliant with FOI. But then I suppose you're right. We'll need to evidence that we've got that in place and done it. So, yeah. Mm.
Something to take into consideration.
Yeah, definitely. And Leslie, I see you've already started to consider this. Well done, you. So we've been looking at requests coming into the information governance team, but with clear responsibilities that services themselves will respond. I agree. I think that's a really good model, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. It's a good approach to take. And hopefully it's one that, you know, can be seen consistently across the sector as well. I think if a few start to say, this is how we're going to do it, I think generally the sector will then say, it's probably the best way. Let's stick with it.
Yeah, no, definitely. Do you know what? As I was just reading that chat then, Shah, I was just thinking about your new LinkedIn group from the data protection kind of national group perspective. It's these kinds of conversations, isn't it, that you expect to see over there? Really, really useful. We have a similar one for the Risk Managers Network as well on LinkedIn. And so, yeah, really, really helpful to kind of get the it's quality stuff, this chat.
Exactly.
Right, Mandy. No, I'm not either. Where can we get more details about this? Well, I'm going to put that to Chris to answer in the chat, because she was my go-to person when it came to understanding FOI. Chris's background, I think, was in the NHS and so was really familiar with all of this stuff already. Chris, can you help us out with a link? That would be amazing. Right, Shah, where did we get to?
I think that might be us nearly wrapping up, to be honest, Becky.
Okay, so it's just one of the things I wanted to say, I suppose, was around the amendments. So I noticed that on the 18th of October, was it, Shah? They added a couple of bits in that they were going to add in potentially. So as the bill is still going through Parliament, they can make amendments as they go along, can't they?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, you're frozen, Becky.
Joan, am I back again?
I can hear you again now. There we go. Oh.
I was just saying about the amendments to the to the bill. So on the I think it was 18th of October, was it?
Yes. Yes, 18th.
Oh, there we go. Look, Joe's asking a question. Charlotte, your new forum, does it replace the old housing? Right. So I don't think that one's used very much, is it, Char, anymore?
No, so from looking at that other forum, it looked quite inactive. So I believe that will still be up and running, but this is just sort of it's a place that I wanted to sort of create that supportive space, because sometimes you find in the housing sector it can be a little bit of a lonely world. So I just wanted to create a new space that, you know, might be able to just be for those questions, opposed to, you know, have you seen this update, but more of a space for the I'm dealing with this kind of scenario. Can anyone help? Has anyone got any advice? So it was more of a sidestep, if that makes sense, opposed to in addition.
Yeah, I completely agree. So, you know, from the perspective of what we do in the Risk Managers Network as well, aligning those two things is quite nice in terms of our partnership working as well, isn't it? So, yeah, really good. Christine, what are you saying? So, the Southwest GDPR group are liaising with. Oh, okay, so that's coming up. That's being reinvigorated by the look of it. So the work that we originally did.
Yeah, the group still. I'm still here. The group still exists, and we do still meet periodically online. And I have been in contact with the NHF to ask them for their support in the access to information scheme in a similar way as we did with the retention schedule. So we have got a person who is coming to the meetings now and then sharing the information that they have got, but it's still in its infancy. What they're hoping to do is to restrict it quite significantly from the whole FOI scenario and making it much more proportionate and actually having some fairly strict guidance around who can apply for information and what data they can actually get. So I think there's going to be a lot more. It's not going to be as broad as FOI. So watch this space. But as soon as we find anything out, we'll try and share it with you. But in terms of the GDPR forum, it isn't being used as much as it ever used to be. You can put a post on there and you might get one or two responses, but it's nowhere near what it used to be. So your new forum will be really welcomed.
Thanks, Chris. Brilliant. Thanks, Chris. That's brilliant. And really good to hear that's not kind of not disappeared off into the ether. And I just spotted a name that I hadn't seen for a little while. Anthony, hello. Yes. Great to hear that that's still going. And I know, Anthony, you were involved in those conversations with us around FOI as well. So, yeah, really, really good. Lovely. Nice to see such familiar faces, or names at least, if not faces.
Well, that's a good question, Jill. I don't think anyone knows, to be honest. It's been put on the back burner, hasn't it? So I think, in my perspective, I personally don't think I don't think anything's going to be done until at least we've had a general election, and then it will become important or a priority again. But with the state of everything as it currently is, I just don't think it's a priority, unfortunately.
Yeah, no, I agree completely. I think the government have got other things to do right now. And I can remember that actually previously when we were, thinking about it from the Brexit perspective, when they, yes, Brexit, remember that. I heard it's coming after Christmas, Andrew says.
Oh, okay. That'll be interesting to keep an eye
off
on
the
then.
Press then. Yeah, yeah. Maybe there's more activity out there than we know.
Or Andrew just knows more than we do.
Or yeah, he's got the intel. Do you reckon that's what it is? Oh, okay. Yeah, there we go. So, yeah,
clearly I've
happened,
missed that
clearly.
Then. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And that just goes to show, doesn't it, what a, you know, an ever-moving world it all is, and, you know, how quickly things move on. If you don't keep your eye completely on the ball, you miss stuff, which is why forums like this are so good.
Exactly, exactly. Well, I think that nicely takes up nearly to the half past point. So thank you for joining me today, Becky. It's been absolutely wonderful having you on with us today, and I really appreciate all of the work that, you know, you've put into helping me run this session.
No problem at all, my complete pleasure, and it's been lovely to join you all.
Perfect. Well, thank you very much everyone for joining us, and we'll see you again next week.
Indeed. Take care all.
Bye.
Thank you.